My name is Noni, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 7th, 2006. I am a member of the Welcome Group in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, where we have two meetings a day. I am a proud Canadian. Big shout out to all my fellow Canadians. This is my second international convention, and I am thrilled to be here. I'm so honored and excited to be asked to share my story and to celebrate sobriety with all of you. As an old-timer in my group always says, I am a miracle. Well, guess what? You're a miracle. You're a miracle. You're a miracle. We have a whole lot of miracles in this room. And thanks for letting me have an Oprah moment. Today, let's celebrate the miracle of sobriety. In preparing for this talk, I took some time to reflect back on the gifts of sobriety. Before coming to AA, I used alcohol to cope. So the first thing to come to mind was that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the ability to cope with life, with problems, with relationship problems. If you're wondering why that would be the first thing to come to mind, well, it's because shortly after I got the request to speak here today, a long-term relationship ended. I have to say it left me in a less than celebratory state of mind. This was not the first time in my life I faced this problem, but I'm happy to say it's the first time I didn't drink to cope with it. And I'm pretty sure I'm not going to drink today. But let me first take you back a ways to what it was like. I had my first blackout drunk when I was 12. At 15, I met the first Doug I was going to marry. Yes, there were more Dougs to come. We were married for a couple of years when he cheated on me. So I got back at him. I cheated on him. And that was the end of the marriage, but also the end of the lies and the cheating. Alone for the first time, I started to drink to help me sleep. And then I started going to bars, drinking too much, and looking for a man. You see, I was using men and alcohol to fill a void in my heart, my soul, that years later I came to believe only God could fill. I went on to have relationships with a couple of more Dougs before I married for the second time. Doug number 4. Are you keeping up? Second marriage, Doug number 4. To throw in a little history, my mom married 2 Franks. What can I say other than it makes it easier to get their name right? I know when my son went from a Melissa to a Vanessa, I had a heck of a time. I managed to control my drinking for several years, so my son had a normal childhood of soccer, skating, beavers, and camping. However, as life happened, first a car accident, which gave me some painful injuries, and then my mother's Alzheimer's, I drank more and more to deal with the pain in my body and in my heart. My drinking progressed to the point where I was hiding alcohol all over the house, in a water bottle in my drawer at work, and even in a pair of boots at my mother's personal care home. It got me through many visits, especially when she could no longer speak, no longer knew who I was. In the end, I was drinking 24/7. Including getting up in the night to have a drink to get rid of the jitters and allow me to get back to sleep. One day, my son, then 19, came home from work and found me passed out on the garage floor. I'd been very good at hiding my drinking, but that was all about to change as he carried his urine-soaked mother into the house. I'd been lying there for several hours on the cement, damaging the nerves in my legs. I couldn't walk for a week without my legs giving out. Sort of like they feel like they're going to do right now. Thank God I hadn't done any permanent damage. My husband finally took me to the hospital, where I was told my liver was enlarged, and if I didn't stop drinking, I'd be dead in 2 years. Doug number four had it. He said I was sucking the life out of him, because that's what we alcoholics do. He changed the locks and kicked me to the curb. So off I went to an apartment with some tough decisions to make. I could go sit in my apartment and drink myself to death, or follow a good friend's suggestion and go to Alcoholics Anonymous. She had been to an Al-Anon meeting in her quest to help me. She said if I didn't go to AA and get help, she couldn't be my friend anymore. We'd been friends for 46 years. Today I celebrate my friend Elaine and her efforts to help me. So off I went to my first AA meeting, a women's meeting, where I was surprised to find laughter and women who seemed happy to see me. I was told to get a sponsor, get a big book, do the steps, and go to meetings. I got a sponsor and proceeded to go through the steps with her, one alcoholic sharing with another. At our first meeting, when she shared her story with me, I related to her story, realized we had this common problem, and that she had found the solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. Today, I celebrate my sponsor, Kate, for her time, for sharing her experience, strength, and hope with me to help me find a solution. I had most of the bedevilments talked about in the big book. I was having trouble with personal relationships. I was depressed, had a feeling of uselessness, and couldn't seem to be of help to other people, even though I'd been trying to be the perfect wife, the perfect daughter, the perfect mother, the perfect sister. And I had PMS, poor me syndrome. I heard my sponsor and others share how they solved their problems by relying on God. I wanted what they had and had become willing to go to any length to get it. When I heard a speaker say, "God is in your heart," I realized right then and there that it was God that would fill that void that I'd been trying to fill with men and alcohol. This God consciousness is the central, most life-changing fact of my life today. Today I celebrate the God of my understanding. I go to sleep every night thanking God for my sobriety and for what I'm grateful for that day. When I wake up each morning, I thank God I'm alive and sober. I ask Him to direct my thinking, and I pray for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. I've learned to pause when agitated and choose to react differently than I used to. I've made amends and changed behaviors. I changed lying and cheating into love, tolerance, and compassion. I've had a psychic change. I'm a different person. Today, I celebrate the new sober me. In going through the steps with my sponsor, I learned to trust God, clean house, and help others. I learned that it is in giving that we receive. In the last few years of my mother's life, I was able to be there as her advocate, to feed her, hold her, lie in bed with her as she was dying, and give her eulogy. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for this precious gift, for these precious memories. Today, I celebrate my mom. I hope you... Without her, I wouldn't be here. I hope you take a moment to all celebrate your mom and your dad on this special day. I was also able to be there for my sister and her children a few years ago as they coped with their mother dying from alcoholism. I was able to sit with them through the night, sharing stories while waiting for her to pass. I can't explain why I made it to Alcoholics Anonymous and she didn't, but I can tell you we did all we could. As the big book says, alcohol is cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Today, I celebrate my sister for inspiring me to be who I'm meant to be. It was not easy to lose my sister. Much like Alzheimer's took my mother from me years before she died, alcoholism took my sister years before she died. She isolated and drank. I think my sister's death was more difficult because I knew there was a solution here in Alcoholics Anonymous. She didn't need to die. I could see only one way to get beyond the grief of losing her. I knew in my heart that she would want me to help others. A few months after her death, I went with our delegate, Pamela, on a weekend trip to the northern part of Manitoba, where I was the recovery speaker, my first time doing this, at a roundup filled with women, many from a nearby medicine lodge. Today, I celebrate my service sponsor, Pamela, for encouraging me to speak, to use my voice in service work for Alcoholics Anonymous. I have, since my sister's death, moved from alternate GSR to GSR to DCM of District 11, Area 80. Our district has been instrumental in getting AA literature and pamphlets into the hospital where my sister spent nearly a month on life support. There are pamphlets in the emergency room and in the waiting rooms. The social work department has packages of pamphlets in their resource material, and I will be giving a PI speech at a staff meeting in the fall. Last week, I gave a public information talk to a group of senior women in the community, women who might know someone like my sister, someone who isolates and drinks. I was told at an assembly a few weeks ago that someone they knew had received some pamphlets I'd left in that emergency department and was now a sober member of their group. Awesome to see this in action. I got a call a month ago from the social work department to say they needed more packages of pamphlets. They had given out 5 of the 6 packages to suffering alcoholics. That was the highlight of my day, a day in which my partner was moving out. Today, I celebrate Concordia Hospital in Winnipeg for distributing our literature to the still suffering alcoholic, the potential newcomer. It seems odd to talk about such sad and painful moments in a talk on celebrating sobriety, but that's life. It's not a bowl of cherries. Some of it's the pits. You've taught me that when pain comes, we learn from it and help others learn. When happiness comes, we accept it as a gift and thank God for it. That day, as I sat on the couch, watching my house emptied of his stuff, and in case you were wondering, his name wasn't Doug, a sponsee called. I spent the whole hour of watching stuff go by on the phone with a sponsee whose marriage was crumbling. I had to smile and think to myself, is that odd or is that God? Today, I celebrate my sponsees, Pat, Marlene, Jane, Leslie, Nancy, Tammy, Tara, and Linda, and pray for a couple that might not be in a good place. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to see a fellowship grow up about me is definitely the bright spot in my life. Watching Linda and Tara get their cakes for 9 months and 1 year sobriety last week, and Leslie presenting her new sponsee with a 3-month cake that's my grandson, Betsy, is watching sobriety in action. And it all started with one alcoholic sharing her experience, strength, and hope with another. If you come to the Welcome Group in Winnipeg, and I hope you do, you will be welcomed with a friendly handshake, a tradition that's withstood the test of time for 45 years. The picture of the handshake in our clubroom is a good reminder that the best place for me is in front of another alcoholic, with a kind word and a shared experience. Today I celebrate my son for his unconditional love and support. He has been the constant in my life. He has been there to celebrate every milestone in my sobriety. And thanks to sobriety, I was able to enjoy every minute of his wedding. I gave a speech, danced a mother and son waltz, and kicked up my heels to celebrate the beginning of this new chapter in his life. I stand before you today, happy, joyous, and free. I stand before you today with a full and thankful heart, filled with God, with love, with compassion for others, and with gratitude for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, filled with laughter and tears and the ability to experience both wholeheartedly. With a newfound passion for ballroom dancing, for snorkeling, and for all things in nature, these are the passions that came to me in sobriety. Today, I celebrate all our newfound passions. Today, I celebrate that we absolutely insist on enjoying life.
Thank you. Thank you. Good job. Good job.
Thank you so much, Noni. I was supposed to give my last drink date in home group, so I'll do that quickly now. My last drink was October 7th, 1980, and my home group is the stepsisters in the Villages, Florida. And I think I have, yes, I have a couple of home group members out there. I think Pam is out there too. Our next speaker is Yuri T. from the Ukraine. Please help me welcome him.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Yuri. Hello there. And I have two home groups. The current one is in Drohobych, Ukraine. And the other one is the Hightstown Friday night men's meeting in Hightstown, New Jersey. My sobriety date is March 12th, 1983. And first of all, I wanted to thank Pamela, Noni, and Darlene, my co-speakers. I wanted to thank all of you for being here. A special thank you to my friends who are here from Ukraine, Canada, U.S., I think perhaps Scotland, and yeah, and I know some South African roots. And again, you know what? Everything that I say today relates to the theme of celebrating sobriety. Most importantly, and I'll probably bring that up, I hope I don't forget, several times is I want to thank God. Because without God, I would be dead. I would be done. And, you know, but for the grace of God, but for this fellowship, I was finished. Again, celebrating sobriety. I had scribbled down a lot of stuff, so I've learned I can't read my own writing, so I just left it there. And I was thinking to myself, you know, those of you who are from my days, you know, where if the car was flooded, you had to open up the carburetor, pour a little gas in there and get it going again, right? Well, that's what that did for me. And now, you know, that I'm moving, I can keep going. Some of the things that I wrote down, and I hope I remember some of them because I think they're very important. I drank for 18 years. I would say that I was an alcoholic from the get-go. Why? Because I drank out of control from the, you know, very beginning. And very shortly, my life, you know, went out of control as well, unmanageable. I was in a good school. I was in a good sports program. You know, I had a great family upbringing, and that all began to go south for me very quickly. And that continued, you know, with certain kind of improvements here and there to make me think that I was doing all right. You know, I couldn't see that I was coming downhill, and then a little bit flat, a little up, and then down again. And I kept saying, oh, you know, it gets a little better. and it wasn't. And so what does that have to do with today's talk is that throughout that time, I really didn't know how to celebrate life. If somebody even mentioned that term to me, I wouldn't know what they were talking about. And to me, celebrating sobriety is celebrating life. Sobriety is life. Everything that I have, I owe to this fellowship. I owe to the folks that came before me who broke their anonymity, who shared their stories. The non-alcoholics that steered me to AA and also told me a lot about, you know, alcoholism. And it took a while to get through to me. I mean, I drank for 18 years, and I'll probably get to this a little later, but I got sober. I used to work as a newspaper reporter, and they gave me an assignment to write about alcoholism. Took me a good 8 months to figure out that I was one of them, you know, that I was alcoholic, you know. I was getting smart, learning all about the disease and about all you people, but I couldn't, you know, see it for myself. But thank God that one day I did. Getting back again, I remember my first drink. I don't know how anybody can't. It was, I didn't mention that, but I'm Canadian. Born in Toronto, and I lived my first 27 years in Canada. A little bit of Montreal, a little bit of Manitoulin Island. Geographic cures, right? And then it took me south to the United States, where I spent 35 years. And the past over 2 years now, it was from April of 2013, I've been living in Ukraine. And hence, you know, Yuri from Ukraine. So anyway, let's get back to where I was. As a young kid, you know, celebration, I think I had some examples of, you know, religious celebrations at home, family celebrations, you know, Christmas comes to mind, somebody's birthday, something like that. But I remember, you know, in a very short time, if alcohol wasn't around or some kind of liquor or whatever, where's the celebration? I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know what I was, you know, but give me a little booze. And then I thought that I was celebrating, you know, I only thought that. I know today that that was mostly an illusion. And the more I drank, the more illusory it got. And you know, I started going, so step two, I needed that. I believe that there was a mental problem with me from the get-go, because I couldn't see the difference between sober living and drunken living and, you know, sanity and insanity. I thought it was all kind of the same, you know. And anyway, you know, I better take my watch off so I know when I gotta stop, right? You'll let me know? Okay. No, I know it's not time yet, but I'd like to follow because I can get carried away. Let's get back. So celebrating, you know, started involving booze more and more. And then, you know, a lot of these, quote, so-called celebrations turned into, you know, violent affairs, nasty affairs, a lot of guilt after, blackouts, things like that, throwing up, getting sick, ending up in places that I don't know how I got there, waking up with strange people, you know, strange cities, things like that. You know, that's not a celebration. That's heading towards a disaster. And I was going to say I'm going to hit to the end, but you know, I'll mention a couple of very important things that happened in my life where they were supposed to be, I think, celebrations. I didn't know how to handle them. One of them is my wedding night. I moved to the United States to get married, and I got ready. I knew there was something wrong about my drinking then. That was back in 1978, so I promised myself I wouldn't drink until later, you know. Used some dry goods to help me, but I didn't touch a drop of alcohol until about 10 or 11 at night. Disaster happened. I never spent that wedding night with my wife. I spent that in the parking lot with, you know, my best friend drinking wine till God knows what time in the morning. And the thing is that I didn't think there was anything wrong with that, you know. I mean, I apologize. I just wanted to, you know, have peace. But I couldn't see. This guy was from California. He was going back in a couple of days, and I had a whole lifetime with my wife, you know. So, derangement already. I made many amends. I think I'm still making them. We're no longer together, but I still, you know how wrong and inappropriate that was. I can't take it back. I wish I could. Another one was the birth of my first child. Son, his name is Lev. He's 33 today. I was still drinking. And, I was looking forward to his birth. And I don't know how many went through this Lamaze. I did. And I prayed that I wouldn't be drinking the day that he, you know, was born, so that I could be there. And lo and behold, I was working for a weekly newspaper. The only day I didn't drink was Monday. And he was born Tuesday. My wife went into labor Monday night, so I was okay. But then, you know, what was to be one of the happiest moments of my life, I didn't know how to handle it. And they handed me the child. I held him for a bit. I handed him back. In a few minutes, I left, and I went drinking to celebrate. And I remember sitting and playing music and, you know, calling the radio station in Philadelphia. I lived far from there, playing my favorite Stones song. And this was supposed to be a celebration. I was supposed to meet my wife the next day at the hospital because they were going to give my son the first bath. Well, I forgot about that. And instead, I went to my office, the newspaper office. I brought a bottle of brandy or something like that to celebrate, you know, totally off. I wish I could take that back, but I can't. You know, some examples. When my second child was born, just to show the example, and I didn't go into any training classes or anything like that, but I somehow knew what to do. I took time off work. I was sober three years then. I took time off work. I spent time in a hospital. I brought my son. I spent time with my wife. It was a whole different ballgame. Again, thanks to sobriety, thanks to AA. In August of 1982, and it was, you know, some time coming already, I reached a point where, well, I was already at that point, but it was getting real bad, that I was threatening to kill myself. And I was doing that when I was drinking. And I knew that I could do anything when I was drinking, because I had done that. I had smashed up the apartment. I had, you know, attacked people. I had stolen. I had lied. I had, you know, done things that I thought I would never do, and I did. So, you know, anything was possible, and it began to scare me. And in one of those drunken stupors, it was, like I said, August of 82, and I'm glad I still had a little faith left in God. I still was going to church. I still was praying. I don't think I was praying right yet. And I uttered a prayer at that time, and it was a prayer uttered from despair, from hopelessness. I didn't know what else to do, and I said, God, help. I can't do this anymore. And it's as if, you know, I met God face to face. I didn't stop drinking for another 8 months, but something happened. I started feeling a little different. And as I said, within a couple of days, the assignments kept coming about, you know, researching alcoholism. And I remember going to a rehabilitation center. Actually, it was a halfway house for women. Monday morning, I was still hungover, you know, popping Valium. But I was open to listening. And that's where it all started. I met this lady, 15 years sober. I couldn't believe, you know, a lady, alcoholic, sober yet, you know. This was something new to me. But it was great. And for the next 8 months, I kept doing that research. And one thing that I want to mention is I met these young kids. They were 15, 16 years old, not drinking. Half of them were sober, half of them probably not. And this psychiatrist who was also in the program told me, I'll show you what sobriety looks like. And he says, just go talk to the kids. And I remember talking to them. And I could see there was something different about the ones that talked the program, that were kind of happy, that were just different. I go, you know, they're more mature than I was. And I was right, because I was still stuck at 14. And the other ones were just, oh yeah, you know, we're going to stop, and we're, you know, this is okay. And I could see the manipulation. So that's when I kind of connected with, there's a difference between being sober and just not drinking, you know, between being abstinent and being sober. And to me, again, sobriety is really not drinking and changing and embracing newness and life and everything that you know God has given me today. So here I go with life as a celebration. On March 12th of 1983, I received the greatest gift of my life. I was in my kitchen. It was a Saturday night. I pulled out a bottle of wine. I wasn't a sophisticated drinker. I had a beer glass in my left hand, the bottle of wine in my right. Poured the wine in there. And I was ready to drink, but I didn't. I heard a voice from the inside. It wasn't somewhere out there. It was in here that said to me, "This is the stuff that's killing you. You don't need it anymore." I have not had a thought of drinking, a desire, a craving since that day. It was lifted. I thought it happened that way to everybody, you know? But you know what? What I didn't get was that I needed to go to AA, because although I'd been there and I talked to a lot of AAs, I thought AA was a place you go to stop drinking, sit around, drink coffee, and then when the next shift comes, you leave and, you know, they take over, right? Well, I'm glad, and again, I'm grateful to this woman. She's no longer on this earth anyway. Kay, that kept bugging me and says, "You know, Yuri, when are you going to go to AA?" And I said, "Well, AA, like, I don't need it," but just to get her off my back, I decided that I would go this one Saturday morning in April, and then I could, you know, say, "Hey, Kay, I already went," and that's it. But something different happened. I walked in, I was welcomed, and it was the same people that I had interviewed, and they says, "Well, here's the reporter. What else do you need?" I didn't know where the words came from, but I said to them, "You know, I don't need anything more in terms of information. I'm one of you. I'm here for me." And I stayed, you know. I made a conscious decision to stay. That's what I really love about, you know, what happened to me, that it was a conscious decision to join AA. And I can understand when somebody says, you know, "Oh, haven't you had enough? Well, you still going to his meetings?" Of course. AA is everything. I was welcomed here. I was accepted here. I was taught how to love. I was taught how to live. I was taught how to say hello. I was taught how to celebrate. I was taught how to laugh. I was taught how to cry, that it's okay. I was taught how to make mistakes, apologize for them. I was, you know, taught about this, all this. Without that, I wouldn't have anything. And wherever I've been, I keep coming back, you know, and I know that this is home for me. This is where I feel together and whole. And everything that I have, and I've gotten a lot. I've had, you know, well, Let me just back up and says, today I'm celebrating, right? I'm celebrating my sobriety. I'm celebrating yours. I'm celebrating, I can say that, you know, July the 4th, the freedom of this great country, you know, that I love. That I lived here for 35 years and, you know, I got sober here. You know, I'm celebrating the family that I have, the friends that I have, the friends that showed up here, gave me a hug, said hello. The friends that, you know, I can call from Ukraine by Skype or phone, say, "Look, I don't know what's going on here. Help me. Listen to me." You know, and to me, I celebrate them. My friend, the bishop who came here from Ukraine, who's helping AA and is always there for me, you know, whenever I call. You know, God keeps, you know, as I'm talking, I keep thinking, I believe that, you know, God is God loves me. You know, that's what I know. And I know that no matter what, right, he's caring for me and he's supporting me and he will give me everything that I need all the time. And I believe that he wants me to celebrate who I am, who you are. You know, as I was doing that little scribbling, there's so many things, you know, I mentioned, or maybe I didn't mention, that when I was in Canada, I loved hockey, you know, and you know, I played as a kid, and then I gave it up because of drinking. I got a chance to coach, you know. Here in the States, they have ice. not the kind in drinks, but, you know, the kind that you skate on as well. And so I was able not only to coach, but to play again and to celebrate and to have fun. And I'm 64 years of age, and I came back from Ukraine. I haven't been on skates for half a year because I skated in Toronto. And I went back and played 2 weeks ago, and you know what? I played better than last year. And you know, as I'm driving home after, I'm just feeling on top of the world, you know? I'm going to give you some examples. I've got two that are in mind. As they come up, I'm going to talk about them. I spent 23 years carrying the message to correction facilities in New Jersey. You know, that for me was a celebration. To come in and feel the gratitude of those men when I walked in there was tremendous. And to hear them say, "You know what, Yuri? We know you're going to be here every Monday or every Tuesday, whatever meeting I was at." And no matter what, they didn't say, "Oh, we love your message, you're talking." He says, "We love the fact that you don't forget about us and you're here all the time and you're dependable." And you know what? That ain't me. That's AA. And that's me representing AA. That's what I learned here, commitment. And that I can carry that through in other things. And another thing that, you know, I brought that prison up, but at one of those, when I was going to one of those meetings, I don't know if ever any of you visit prisons. I ended up actually working in a prison for 7 years after, became an alcohol and drug counselor. So again, gratitude, celebration. But I was going to that prison. It's in New Jersey. It's the, what is it? I can't speak English anymore. The lockdown place, the Trenton State Prison. Now it's called the Prison of New Jersey. No plants, no flowers, you know, but there was one dandelion growing by the side, you know? And I looked at it and I teared because it looked so beautiful. And you know what I teared about? Maybe not about the dandelion, but that I was sober and that I could appreciate the color and I could appreciate God showing himself there that way, you know? And I learned in AA also about prayer and meditation. I don't always do it there great. I need to do it better because I heard some speakers this morning and I'm thinking, Yuri, you need to do it more. But I learned that I needed to be alone, spend time alone, you know, and celebrate the connection, all right? And so I would go into the mountains, into the woods, camp out by myself, go in a canoe and just kind of be and just feel. And it was just tremendous. And pray and think, you know. And again, what a celebration of nature. And look at the river and, you know, the rapids and the water and the sky. You know, the bears. Some bears that I met, black bears. But again, you know, as you see, I managed. Another fellow comes to mind in Druhobych. There's this old fellow. I'm not going to break his anonymity. But all of a sudden he showed up one day for a meeting and then he didn't ever ask me to be a sponsor, but he says, "Can you meet me today?" And I said, "Okay." So we talked for an hour, and then he says, "Can you meet me tomorrow?" And he's asking me to meet him every day. I kept saying, "Okay." And I was feeling grateful. But, you know, some days I would be coming from my job, and I knew that at night I had something else to do, and I don't have much time. And there he is again calling, "Well, can you see me today?" And I would say, "Sure." And you know what? And even during our talk and after he left, again, I was feeling gratitude. I was, and you know, I guess I'm talking a lot about gratitude because how can you celebrate without feeling grateful? You know what I mean? And feeling appreciative and, you know, whether it's like living, I was going to say one day at a time, that too, but living in the moment and just like right now, this very moment, you know, click, whew, this is beautiful. And you know what? I've learned, not just from AA literature, but they, you know, suggest in the 11th step, you know, read some other spiritual literature, right? That right now, this moment is all we got. Nothing else exists. Everything is just thought and illusion, but you know, this is real, right? And being here in the moment, feeling that, talking and you know, I guess right now, not worrying, not fretting, just, you know, being alive. And you know, I've had some feelings, I don't know if I have it yet, maybe I'll have it later today, that I could say, you know what, I can die right now, because everything is just so perfect. It is so good. Come to think of it, in 1990 I almost died because I had anaphylactic shock, if anybody knows what that is, where your whole system begins to shut down. I ate shellfish, I'd been eating it all my life, and all of a sudden it turned on me. I didn't know. Got myself to the hospital, and you know, they got me in time. And you know what? A lot of people said, oh, poor Yuri, poor this. I says, well, I'm glad I'm alive, but it was a great experience, you know, because I kind of got in touch with death a bit, and, you know, I lost fear of that. And I remember I was playing hockey still, and that week, good things happened. I got my first coaching job, coaching high school hockey. For the first time in my life, I scored 4 goals, you know. And you know, like, I could celebrate, I could share with people, I could talk about it, I could feel good, I could thank God. Not the old way. You know what I mean? Celebration. I belong to the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. I'm also, I would say, half Roman Catholic because I went to Catholic school in Canada, and I sent my kids here and we went to church. So I'm kind of, you know, just like I'm Canadian, American, Ukrainian. But, you know, I'm comfortable being that. And you know, I also have visited many monasteries to celebrate, whether it's, you know, to be taught how to pray, you know, when the monks get out there and do their praying, or just being there in that space, in that place where that's been prayed over. Again, to me, that's a celebration. You know, I mentioned my kids. I'm having I've had that with my son kind of on and off. And then my daughter is kind of angry at me because I'm in Ukraine and she feels abandoned. And it's very hard for me. My kids are precious. And they mean the world to me. And yet, there's certain things that I need to do. And that I needed to do. I'm also divorced. And that was probably the hardest thing for me to do in my life. Yeah, but you go on. And life doesn't end. I believe, you know, that I'm doing the best that I can, and I'm trying to answer God's call in the best way I know how. Obviously, I'm not doing it alone. So again, I'm going to thank you for your support, and my dear friends and others, and you know, a lot of times people who I don't even know. And again, I can celebrate like that. I can be in a store, supermarket, on the street. I was going to say with police. Even now with police sometimes. And, you know, and have a celebration. Have a laugh. Say a joke, you know. Listen. Be understanding. Ask him, how are you doing today? You know, how's your life going? In fact, that happened to me in Ukraine. And interesting things happen. I don't know how many follow, but it's rough in eastern Ukraine. We've got a war going on there. People are dying. I was going to Kiev, our capital. That's a nice train ride, and they're doing great there. We're, you know, having workshops on traditions, on concepts, and that. And usually, I catch this little bus in town, and I go to the train station, and you know, and I usually cut it close. Like I'm still the deadline man, just like in a newspaper. You know, 8 o'clock. All right, I'll be there a minute before. And I cut it a little too close this time. I thought, it says, I can't take the train. I got to take a cab. I don't want to do it, you know, because I don't have much money. I'm living on a tight budget, but it says, I got to do it. I can't miss the train. I get on this taxi, and I'm driving, and, you know, we're sitting quietly. And all of a sudden, I says, well, I'll ask the guy. I don't know why. Well, how are you doing? And he kind of says, I says, how are you really doing? He says, awful. He says, I've got 2 sons out in the east fighting, and I don't know what's happening with them. Whew. I didn't know what to tell him. I sat there with him. I said, okay. And I said, I'll pray for them. I asked them, what are their names? I have forgotten them, but I remember that I remembered them. Then I wrote them down somewhere, and for several days I prayed for them. You know, things like that. You know, and I guess, to me, you know, I'll mention one more thing I had that written down, the celebration. My mother died last summer, June 11th, day after, you know, our big celebration. She was 91. And my dad passed away at the age of 90 back in 2000. I was able to celebrate their passing on, you know. I was sober. I had made my amends. I had made the best relationships that I could with them. And so when they died at their funeral, at their wake, I was able to talk about them, to talk about, you know, the preciousness of life and you know, parts of what I missed with them, but parts of what I had. And I know that at the last time, you know, it was great. And you know, I thank the fellowship for that. I thank, you know, the steps, right? 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that I was able to do that. 11, 10, you know, all of them. And I think even now, I had written it down for myself. What am I talking about? I'm talking about step 12, right? Celebrating sobriety. Carrying the message, practicing our principles in all our affairs. Because to me, when I'm doing that, I'm celebrating. I'm giving back. I'm living out, you know, the St. Francis prayer. And yeah, hey, I'm not a monk. I'm not doing it great. But you know what? I get inspiration from examples. And at least I have something to go by and something to follow. So that my mind, which doesn't always work right and usually doesn't, can get kind of, you know, redirected. And I can find out, well, how am I supposed to live? Well, just try this today. You know what I mean? Try something different. Try to be humble. Try to listen. Try to ask somebody how they're doing and then listen when they're telling you. You know what I mean? Things like that. And I don't know, get out of your own way. And I'm repeating stuff that I hear in the rooms. 2 minutes. I got 2 minutes. All right. Celebrating. You know, when I got sober, the people who helped me didn't have any qualms. I mean, I believe that they were respectful of our traditions, but they had no problem telling me that they were alcoholic. You know, I was a newspaper reporter, putting it out there, sharing, and giving me other great examples. And I really appreciate that. And there was one, I'm going to mention him. His wife is sitting here, and his name is Riley. I met him when he was with the governor of New Jersey, and he was the director of addiction services, or maybe it was alcohol and drug or something. But the director of alcoholism, right? They had only one unit then. And there's the governor talking about, you know, we need to stop this and this and this. And there's Riley telling his story, how he shot himself in the foot, you know. And then he got sober. And you know what? He got my attention. And we became, you know, good friends, good colleagues. And even though I was moving around, we kept in touch. And he helped out. And he was always willing. I could always call upon him to talk about recovery and himself and how to celebrate life. Whether it was in jail, at a school, at whatever. And I was with him when he died. Well, not at that very moment, but as he was, you know, moving on back in December of 2012. And I'm wearing his ring that his wife gave me, you know, our triangle. And he's just one example, again, of celebrating, of how to live, how to help, how to give, how to, you know, be the best example, I guess, of the big book and the steps. I thank you very much for the honor and the privilege of speaking here. God bless you. I love you.
Thank you, Yuri. Please help me welcome Darlene C. from Illinois.
Hi, I'm Darlene. I'm an alcoholic. Now I've told you who I am and what I am. because I need to tell you, but I need to remind myself those things. Because if I forget what I am, I don't care who I am. My sobriety date is March 95, November 95, and June 13th, 1996. So I hope that gives you some idea of that I was not an overnight wonder. It took me several tries to be able to get this program, but that's a wonderful thing because the door is always open. I'd like to tell you how this process began. It's unbelievable. I was asked, I don't know, months back, if I would be willing to speak at the convention. And naturally, I assumed I was going to be the dinner speaker. I don't know if I was disappointed or elated when I found out that I had to share. Anyway, all I could think of is my first sponsor, who said that when AA extends a hand out, mine should be there to reach out and meet it. And she had told me from probably day one that the only reason I had to refuse to participate in an AA function is if I was dead. That didn't give me a lot of options. So my answer was, yes, I would love to. And I believe at that time we were asked to list three topics, was that right, that we would be willing to speak on? This one couldn't be more appropriate. One of them was, I believe it was, what, help me out, Tradition 4, Rule 62? Don't take yourself so damn seriously. So, the invitation was there. I scribbled down my ideas of what topics would interest me, and then I promptly forgot about everything. I went on doing my normal, everyday things and didn't give it another thought. Until there was this email, and it says, this is your topic. This is your room number. And that night, I wrote the most perfect address that you are going to be absolutely stunned with. It was wonderful. It was fantastic. But I forgot to sleep that night. It was more important to, you know, write this wonderful, I hope you're taking notes and, you know, whatever, because it was fantastic. The next night, I rewrote the whole thing so it was even more fantastic than the first one. Well, see, and I wrote them all in my head, so you know how well you remember those? You don't, at least I didn't. And I proceeded to forget all about it again. Now all of a sudden it's here. I wrote this wonderful epistle about an hour ago. I was hiding back there when the former speakers were in here, trying to put my ideas into some kind of organized format. I'm not sure I succeeded, but I will give you everything I have. What I had decided to do when I was notified of the topic. I really didn't want this to be I did this, and I said that, and I thought, no, if this is going to be a we program, what I wanted to do was do, what I wound up doing was I did a lead at one of the groups I attend regularly, and I did my lead about asking for help. You know how hard that is, right? Only this time I was the one asking for help. I said, how do I tell these people with dignity, without a puffed up chest, that I have been invited to speak to a group of alcoholics on this topic and ask for their help? I said, look, guys, here I am. I need to talk about celebrating sobriety. Would you help me out? Would you tell me how you did it or you do it? Because I would like to take your words here. And they were willing to do that for me. And now I have to go back and apologize to all of them because I left every single note at home. There goes perfection, right? Anyway, I tried to remember what they said. So, in a kind of a sort of way, this is what I remember them saying. They said they celebrated by being open-minded. They celebrated by respecting other people's opinions. They celebrated by thinking of others. They celebrated by keeping things, they kept by turning things over and over and over again. They celebrated by trying to do the right thing. They celebrated by enjoying the family that is now healing. They celebrated with the ability to be more honest with not only themselves but with others. They celebrated by being dependable, by saying what they mean and meaning what they say. They celebrated by the finding a higher power and using it. At this point in time, I had to remember the first joke I ever heard in AA. Okay, ready? What's the difference between God and me? God doesn't want to be me. You know, and that's another thing, just to be able to laugh at ourselves over something that's very serious. You know, to poke fun at ourselves, even though we are dealing with a very, very serious illness. And I respect their answers. But I'm taken into another direction. My idea of celebrating is way, way different than theirs is. And I asked a trusted friend of mine, what should I do? And she reminded me, what's on that coin? It says, to thine own self be true. And that's where I need to take myself. And I'd like to kidnap you for a while. Now I'm about 3 seconds sober, and I know everything. There's a wanderers group in the area, and one of the ladies, I think she had about 900 years of sobriety at that time, And see, if I'm going to tell one, I'm going to tell it this big so you know I'm really kidding. She did have 900 years of sobriety, and she came up to me and asked me, she said, how would you like to join us Friday night? She says, we're playing dominoes. My God, my life is over. I am going to spend the rest of my life playing dominoes on Friday night. Whoopee. I never did go. My next experience, where I really didn't look at it until the celebration, until much later, is my sponsor volunteered me for a panel. And once again, I don't know how much sobriety I had, maybe 4 seconds this time. And she said, you are now on the panel. We are going to talk about the promises. I don't know anything about the promises. So I just thought, this is the smart thing to do. I'll just take that section of the promises where it says we can, I'm not going to remember. We can deal with things that... Thank you. That's the one. We'll deal with things that used to baffle us. And I had to talk about toilet paper. Because the toilet paper baffled me. Because we could never agree whether it went over the top or under the bottom. That's all I knew at that time. There was another gentleman in the meetings that I attended, and, you know, he was such a kidder. And he was talking about us ladies. He says, how come you never wear dresses and that real, those really hot outfits to the meeting? I think we got him back. There was a couple of us that kind of plotted after that comment. Here's what we did to him. Meeting starts at 10 o'clock. We ladies weren't in there at that time. We were out in the hallway getting dressed. We put on, let's call them sports bras, scarves. I had the most wonderful pair of underwear. Oh, it was gorgeous. They were orange, with orange flowers all over. We put them all over our pants and walked into the meeting. He never said another word. Never said another word. I tell this story because I can. Maybe 2 weeks ago, I had to go to a surgical center for, you know, just a procedure. It was nothing big deal about it. The doctor had told me that I was capable of driving myself there and back home. You know, nothing, no problem there. But when someone walks up to you and offers to drive you there, you don't say no. So my heart partner takes me to the facility. First thing they give you is the piece of paper to fill out. I hope I'm not embarrassing you, because that's not my intent, but I'll apologize later. They give you a card to fill out, and they want to know who's going to drive you home. And I'm telling the people there that I can drive myself home. You know, the doctor said I could. And they said, okay, you know, just fill it out. Anyway, that's the rules. So the first name, the first line says your name. Well, you know, I know what it is, so I write it down. On the next line, they ask, who's going to take you home? So I put his name down.
The third line says, ready? Relationship. So my filters are all off. They're gone. I put down an S because I was going to write spouse. And you know these people never read these papers anyway, right? Smarty pants writes down sex slave. I tell you what, that went around that place so fast. It is wonderful they thought he wrote it. No filter. No filter. None at all. But see, that to me is part of having the fun in sobriety. Would I have done that if I was drinking? Uh-uh. Would never have occurred to me. Never. My adult children, let's blame the son. Let's put the blame where it goes. I don't know, birthday, Mother's Day, Christmas, some occasion that, you know, meant give mom something. He comes up and he hands me this package, which I, you know, now tear to shreds, open it up, and it's the dictionary of immaturity. You know what? I treasure that. And I will share it with you because one of the most marvelous things in that book is how to take off your underpants without taking off your pants. So if you need to know that, I will tell you later. It's wonderful. My children and with a little help from you know who, have often kidnapped me. All I'm told is what time to be ready, what to wear, and I have no more information, which drives me nuts. The last time they did this, I think it was Mother's Day, wasn't it? I got a tiara. And we went to the roller derby. And there I am, sitting in with my tiara. With talk about refrigerator Perry. These ladies look like refrigerators on wheels. My God, they are some tough-looking ladies. But you know what? It was wonderful. They also gave me bathtub crayons. You just sit in the bathtub and draw on the sides, and then once you're done, it comes right off. Why not? One time they asked me, another present for mom thing, they asked me what I'd like. Finger paints. What is there about going like this with all sorts of colors? It is like making your own rainbow. How fun. Takes no talent because I don't have any. And you know when we talk about the toolbox that we all have? I'm going to suggest some more things to put in it. I think our toolkit should have a kite. When's the last time you flew one? It should have crayons. Because then you're free to color blue trees or purple trees or any kind of color trees you want. Isn't it hard to draw a tree and not make it automatically green? I would put sidewalk chalk in your toolbox. What a beautiful driveway you'd have. Look at all those colors. And HP would tell you when it's time to do it again because he'd send rain. And your picture is gone. And now you have a new canvas for another one. We had gone on vacation somewhere and they had blocked off the whole entire street. And lining the street was nothing but sidewalk chalk. And everybody, tall, short, fat, little, didn't matter. Everybody was invited to draw on the street. It was beautiful. I'd also put bubbles in your toolbox. I put bubbles in there, and I don't know how big your toolbox is, but I'd put in a fly swatter. Have you ever tried it? Put bubble juice in a pie pan. Take the fly swatter, put it in the bubbles, and go like this. You'll have 12 gazillion bubbles. Have you know those sacks where potatoes and onions come in? Dunk it in your bubble juice, wave it around, you'll have 12 million more. Save your bubbles. Have you ever done it in the wintertime? And if not, why not? The next time it gets really cold, maybe not around here, but by us it will get there. Take your bubbles. Just blow one. You want it on a gentle breeze just to watch that bubble float, float. And when it's finished, it makes this magical kind of ping and it breaks. It's beautiful. I don't know, there's sometimes I just wonder, when did we stop playing? No. But sometimes there's a fine line between being childlike and childish. You've heard the words, act your age. Ladies, don't fill in the blank. We've heard all these things since we were small and growing up. And sometimes it's really hard to forget or get rid of those things that we no longer need. When's the last time you jumped in a puddle? Remember, Mom told you not to get your shoes wet. When did you just lay down in the grass and watch the shapes of the clouds? When did you last wiggle your toes in the grass? What's the last time you made a phone call just for no reason at all? Last time I told a friend of mine, I said, gee, I was thinking about you. She was such a smart aleck. She said, my phone didn't ring. I thought the hardest part for me is to let go of past things that get in my way so that I have room for the new things to replace those things. So I'm just going to wish you the biggest... No, I don't want to wish, do I? I know better. I'm going to hope that you can just enjoy your sobriety. Whether you can do it like me, blowing bubbles all over the place, or just being like the people at my meeting that did it in a quiet manner. Enjoy. I will tell you what I had in mind. See that bag over there on the corner of the table?
inside of it is another child gift, adult child gift. I brought it with me because I was going to use it right now, and I don't want to embarrass anybody. I don't want to embarrass you or anybody up on the panel. It's an air pump in there. And the balloons themselves are probably about this long. You put it on the pump, you blow it up, and you let it go. So if you can use your imagination, that's what you are going to see. Who knows? Maybe it'll happen later. But that's my idea of just celebrating sobriety. Thank you for making me work for it.